back to life, I'll find you. Push my thumbs into your eyes and blind you.
Everybody, you're listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and sitting in this tiny West Town apartment in the director's chair is Chris Hefner.
Hello.
There he is. This is the first time we've had an actual director in the director's chair. Let's start off cheesy. All right.
Sure.
So the reason why Chris is on the show, besides me knowing him, is he's premiering his first feature length. Is this correct?
Yeah.
At the Music Box Theater in Chicago, Illinois on Friday. It's a public event, unlike most Chicago people that show films at the Music Box where you have to sneak in friends after hours. This is legit.
This is actually something that will happen in the real world.
It is sanctioned.
It is.
You have an amazing poster. We didn't talk about that. Tony Fitzpatrick did your poster.
He did.
Even if you don't like film, go look at his poster. It's that good.
The poster is definitely worth looking at.
Yeah.
Tony was really generous to do that.
Let's talk about how much Tony makes a year, and his religious beliefs, and we'll go from there. I know Chris, and I've known Chris for a while, through Daniel Knox, the guy that does a lot of the music, in the show. And, Chris, you play Saw with Mr. Knox.
I do.
How does a guy that wanted to make films end up playing Saw?
Well, I listen to a lot of music. I've never really been a serious musician, but I listen to it all the time. And I had a theremin for a long time, and it was a piece of garbage, and it eventually broke down. And so it kind of became this decision of, do I buy a new theremin, or do I learn how to play something else?
Why did you ever own a theremin?
Why not? You know, why would you not want to own a theremin?
They're bulky.
Not this one. It was tiny, but I think that was part of the problem.
Why it broke?
Yeah.
Okay, so when did you get a theremin? How old were you?
Maybe 15, 16.
Do you remember what you would play in a theremin at 15 and 16 years old?
I was just kind of like weird, noisy stuff. I figured out at one point how to play the theme from The Godfather, which is strange. I don't have really any relationship with that movie at all, but I figured that out.
When I was 16, we listened to a lot of Smashing Pumpkins. Did you play a lot of Smashing Pumpkins on your theremin?
I didn't. I've never been fond of the Smashing Pumpkins.
What a shock. All right, so you didn't grow up in Chicago. Let's go back even further. You grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
I did.
Why did you come to Chicago?
I came here to go to Columbia for film school.
Are you glad you did that?
I was lured by the siren. I am. I think at the end of the day, I am. It's, I'm glad I'm in Chicago, I'm glad I'm making films, and I'm glad I had the teachers that I had.
How was growing up in Kalamazoo, Michigan? A small town, big town, were you in the city proper? How big is the city?
When I was real little, until I was about 8, I lived in a neighborhood called Millwood, which is, yeah, I mean, it's Kalamazoo proper. And then, at that point, we moved out to, like, sort of in between Kalamazoo and a town called Pawpaw.
Mm-hmm.
Which both sound made up, you know.
But, yeah, they do.
But they're not.
In a nice way. In a very idyllic way.
In like a really whimsical, you know. So I moved out there and I went to high school in Pawpaw, but I went to like a after school and weekends art school in mm-hmm. Kalamazoo. So that's where I spent most of my time.
Is that where you first, I guess, developed a love of film? Or was it just...
I've always watched a lot of movies and I've always been into it. But that was the first opportunity I had to just produce artwork constantly, and when we had access to a dark room, and you could just kind of use it as a studio and go in there and take color and design theory classes or photography or, you know, whatever. And
so you're glad you did that?
Yeah, well, that was fantastic. Yeah, that was life-changingly good.
What did your parents think of this?
They were really supportive of it.
What about now?
They're really so. They're coming to the premiere, and they're cool with
that
it.
That is so nice.
It is. I mean, my brother, like, they raised, my brother's a tattoo artist, and I'm an experimental filmmaker, so.
That's crazy. That's so nice.
They've done a good job for the world.
Are they religious people?
They're not. No,
I didn't think so. No. Okay. Do you want to talk about your tattoos? I've always admired them from afar.
Oh, thanks.
Did your brother do any of those?
He did. He did, these top, like, on my arm here, there's like a Gibson girl.
Okay.
And Moby Dick.
What's a Gibson girl? For those that don't know,
it's a kind of an iconic woman from the turn of last century.
Like if you've ever read the book Maggie Girl of the Streets, that's who they're referring to.
Sure.
Have you ever read that book?
I haven't, actually.
It's not a bad book.
I feel like I had a copy of it at some point. I don't know. I'm going to go off on a tangent.
I'm looking at my bookshelf in the other room. I can see it right now.
Yeah.
It's next to Todd Dill's book. It's by Steven Dreiser. I'll give that to you on the way out.
All right.
There you go.
Deal.
See, we're totally different people. That's why I like you, Chris. You have tattoos. I have extra weight. Okay. So you go to Columbia College. You go for film.
I do.
How many of your classmates do you talk to, and how many of them actually finished with a film degree?
I don't really know any of them.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I've never been really hugely social. Mm-hmm. So.
But if it's a film collaborate, like when you're in film school, I'm assuming you make a lot of short films.
Right.
Which means you collaborate with a lot of people.
Right. I guess that's true.
So do you still talk to any of these people, or did you just like learn what you needed to learn, learn the skill set, and leave?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think usually when I was making things in school, I tried to be as self-contained as possible with making things. And
why is that?
Just because I feel like it's more direct, and I have to rely on less people to do things. And so I would use there were friends of mine that would help make mm-hmm. stuff, but they weren't people I went to school with.
If you went to school, why did you want to be a director? Why did you want to go to film school if you wanted to work on things alone? Or prefer to work on things alone?
I don't know. I started off when I was a kid doing a lot of two-dimensional stuff, and then that kind of expanded into photography, and that kind of expanded into like putting the photographs into sculptures, and then the sculptures kind of expanded into installations expanded into performances with installation. And so making films kind of finishes that sentence in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of brings it back to a way to make an object from that. And then subsequently making films and then showing them in particular ways, like the thing on Friday, you know, having this kind of grandiose mm-hmm. premiere evening.
Yeah.
That's consciously super formal.
Are you going to be wearing a suit?
I am. I have invested in tails.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I got a hold of a pair of tails and a vest from, the original costume vault of NBC when they first opened here in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's neat.
It is really neat. I can't believe they fit me. It was really weird. I got them at this place called Silver Moon.
Wait a second. Why do you think they wouldn't fit? You're a very, very skinny, lanky man that bikes everywhere. Everything fits you, goddammit. You're wearing a small women's t-shirt right now. Eat some meat.
No, usually things are too big.
Oh, really? Yes. Oh, what a problem. Yeah. You fucking dick. All right.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. You're smiling so brightly.
I know.
Okay. Why did you stay in Chicago? I mean, if you're working on these things, you don't have to live here.
No, but I really like Chicago. I love it here. The community is really good for people that want to just work. Mm-hmm. It's people have less of an illusion of entitlement because they live here. You know,
yeah.
People go to the coastal towns for that, and that's fine. You know, people do a lot of stuff.
You sound very political right now, like you really want to attack something. But
no, it's fine. It's, you know, it's easy to get frustrated with the whole flyover zone thing if you're making films in Chicago. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not making films for the same reason. I'm not making work for a market.
Well, why are you making your film then?
There's a reason. I mean, the reason is in a general way, I'm making films because I you know, feel like I have to, and it's the way to sort of work out what I see around me, or mm-hmm. you know, work through ideas, and it's just the way of process. Everybody has a way of processing the things that they come across during the day, and so that's my way of doing it. But this particular movie is sort of my way of processing how to deal with living in the States right now, how to deal with living in a time when it's becoming very aware, or it's becoming very apparent that things need to fundamentally shift in order for people to remain, you know, alive and for things to keep going. I mean,
so it's a film about a fear of progress then?
No, it's a film about people paying pretty much for reaching beyond their means and for consuming too much.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's kind of about people it's, you know, it's about when people go and go and go and they push and push as far, you know, they'll eat as much as they're given, and then at a certain point, you know, the bill comes. And so it's just kind of sort of about the bill coming.
If I had a credit card, I would love to max it out buying tickets to your film. For the irony. We're gonna talk about this film more, but let's go back a little bit further. But let's go back to film school here.
Sure.
You made a lot of shorts in film school.
I did. Yeah.
Do you like any of those now, looking back on them?
Or
do you look at them all like learning experiences?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of both. I mean, most there's a couple of things I've made that, you know, I wouldn't mind if they just never saw the light of the day, and that's fine. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's film school.
No, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to make some films. I wanted to go to film school. My mother wouldn't co-sign on the loan, so I couldn't go.
Right.
I'm kind of glad I didn't go.
Phil, there's a lot of horse hockey in film school. I mean, there's a lot of stuff where, a lot of people, I don't know, it's a weird environment. But to answer your question, There are a couple films that I made towards the end of film school that I do like legitimately.
Okay.
That are, you know, hugely imperfect, but...
Would you ever want to develop them into something that's a feature length?
No. I'd rather just make more stuff that has to do with what I'm thinking about now.
So is The Pink Hotel the first thing you've made since film school, or did you make shorts afterwards?
No. The vast majority of stuff that I've made has been after school.
Okay. Why?
Just because it was how I felt like, you know, it was where the energy was going. It was mm-hmm. where I wanted to direct stuff. And you know, so I've just been making a lot of shorts and getting them shown around in festivals. And I never really felt like I had anything worth addressing that couldn't be done in, you know, 10 minutes or less.
Okay.
And then, so this is the first time when things started to sort of crystallize into something that needed more space and necessitated more attention.
And you started this about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I wrote it 3 years ago.
Do you remember the impetus for this?
I think it was a lot of things. It's been, usually my process with stuff is just kind of keep notes, take a lot of notes as ideas start kind of coming. Mm-hmm. And when you have those, a certain amount of those, you start drawing relationships with them. In a really literal sense, one of the biggest things that was an impetus for the film was I was reading about the Edgewater Beach Hotel, which was up on Berwyn, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But
for those of you that aren't in Chicago, Edgewater is a neighborhood. It's kind of okay. It's kind of bad. It's right on the lake,
mm-hmm.
north side. Everyone knows where Wrigley Field is. It's about 20 blocks north of Wrigley Field.
Right.
So,
and there in the first half of last century, up until the late 60s, there was a luxury hotel up there called the Edgewater Beach Hotel, and it was enormous. And
was that one of those ones on the lakefront itself?
Yeah.
That had to get torn down?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you've seen this TV show Newhart, he lives in a building that's with, like, near the Edgewater. Continues.
Exactly. So what happened was there's still a remnant of the building there. There was an apartment building that was built as sort of an adjunct, you know, mm-hmm. property in the mid 20s that is pink. It's a big giant pink building.
And it's still there.
And it's now co-op apartments. But just south of that, there was this enormous yellow stucco building that was the elite hotel, you know, for people to come to, like the elite of the elite would stay there. And so it was huge in the first half of the 20th century, and then it started to decline. It started to change hands. It fell into the hands of the mob at one point. Things would start happening with it where, you know, like rats or water damage would take over a floor, and they would just shut down the floor and keep everything else running. And so that idea of that trajectory and that kind of arc of something that's huge and grand and luxurious having to succumb to the same decay that everything else does. Like, mm-hmm. inevitably everything is going to end. And so it just seemed like a really nice object for that. Like,
okay.
An object lesson.
Okay. So you find out about this... You recognize this exists. You're, mm-hmm. you're saying I have to make a film about this.
In a way, I think it was something I was just reading about a lot, and then looking around at what's going on around me currently, in a nostalgic way, and, mm-hmm. and you know what's actually happening in the world. You recognize patterns, and you see, well, you know, the way that things came crashing down or are crashing down, arguably, has a lot to do with the same mechanisms that were in place in the late 20s that, you know, ended in the depression in the 30s. And mm-hmm. it's a very apt comparison to make, I mm-hmm. think. And it's, you can sort of map one on top of the other,
yeah.
and it fits alarmingly well. So that idea of there being these cycles and of people, because they're not paying attention, because they're overconsuming and working completely outside of what is healthy for the world around them, these cycles will continue and harshen, you know, mm-hmm. which I don't know if that's a word, harshen. That's a word, harshen.
Yeah.
They'll get worse. And so the idea of people having to pay for it.
Okay. if you've ever heard Mr. Knox's song from this podcast, you can see why Chris and him are friends. It's all about, and it doesn't make sense why I talk to either of them. I'm the jovial clown. Okay.
We like you, though.
Damn right you like me. Fucking do everything. All right. So let's talk about the technical aspects of the film, because I actually don't really want to know more.
Okay.
I mean, let's get people in the seats on Friday sure. night, 9:45 p.m.
Yeah, we shouldn't over-talk it.
If you are on a date, this mm-hmm. is going to be great. If you're not on a date, this will be a place to meet people that are dressed well.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot of stunningly attractive people there.
Yeah. Think about it, okay?
That's true, too.
I'm not joking, sir.
I'm not either.
No, listen. I have a girlfriend. I'm happily whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer bike around. I no longer. And I'm the guy that showers. I wear deodorants. I wear decent to good clothes, but never great clothes. These are the kind of people that you specifically. I'm looking at you and literally pointing at you. You motherfuckers are so goddamn thin. You're biking around all the time. And you don't care if how bad you smell. And then this is your one night.
Do I smell
out.
Like?
No,
I
you smell
bad?
Fine. But last night at the Hungry or on Monday Night Was Everything Is Terrible. Holy shit!
Yeah,
I gotta just turn the. I love those people dearly, but oh my god, yeah. Fuck you, dumpster diver! You make more than me. Shop reasonably, and let's all eat meat. Goddamn it! Anyways, so it's gonna be full of really fit bike people that are very open minded to sexual favors. It's gonna be great.
Sure.
Not
sure.
You. Just saying your crowd. I know yeah. your crowd.
I no. Oh. Oh, okay.
Bunch of young people looking for sexual favors. Please don't put that on a poster, actually. See what happens.
Young people looking for sexual favors. Yeah.
I didn't show them the Pink Hotel and
yeah,
see what happens.
Like, well, it's hard to convince people that someone with the last name Hefner that made a movie called The Pink Hotel wasn't making a porn.
I never thought of that.
It's true.
Yeah.
Also, if you look it up on the Internet Movie Database, there the thing that comes up is there's a film called Pink Hotel on Butt Row.
B-U-T-T?
Yeah, B-U-T-T. And Pink Hotel on Butt Row 2, which I wish was T-O-O, but I think is just the numeral.
If there was a movie called The Pink Hotel, would mm-hmm. you have named this The Pink Hotel?
Yeah, probably.
I just finished the script, and I really want to use The Talking Cure mm-hmm. as the name of the script, as mm-hmm. the name of the film, but, I know I'll make this short and get it out before this big one comes out, but I'm just not gonna...
Is there a movie called The Talking Cure?
There is one in production with really big stars.
Ooh.
It's the guy that... It's a David Cronenberg film.
You should make it The Talking Cure, but with, all caps on V.
No.
No.
I might use The Talking Cure, but like part of the title is The Babies from Look Who's Talking To popping up.
Right.
Then it
would
be unique.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the technical aspects of this film. This was shot on 8mm.
Yeah.
This is in black and white.
It is.
Why was this shot on 8mm and why black and white?
You know, like I was talking about before, there's a lot of drawing reference with mm-hmm. the past and the way that those cycles work. So referencing not only the time period, but sort of an imaginary version of the time period, something that you see in Hollywood movies.
Really quickly, yeah. Back to the actual film. Sorry about that.
No.
Do you make it clear when it is?
No.
I like that. Thank you for not doing that.
Yeah. No, it says it's during the war, which...
That's great. I like...
You know...
That's very good.
All the time. So.
You artist. Okay. Back to the technical aspects. 8mm, black and white.
Yeah. I mean, the vast majority of my shorts are on Super 8 as well.
Okay, why is that?
It's a look that I'm drawn to, and a lot of them have to do with similar themes of decay and of corporate reality in image making, and so having a recognizable body that those things exist on, and you know, like we were talking about earlier, I'm not against video, and mm-hmm. it was edited digitally. I did a telecine, and it was all edited digitally, so it does involve video, but it seemed like the most direct route, and it's also just
wait. How did you mean? It seems the most direct route. How to get the look you want?
Yeah, and yeah,
okay. Yeah. Because it's not the direct route in terms of
it's not the direct route in anything else. In any way. Yeah, no,
it's definitely not the cheapest route.
It's not. No.
So if how don't tell me your budget. That's very rude. But tell me later. I want to know. Yeah. You're limited in how much you can shoot.
You are. Yeah.
You told me earlier you only get four. You have 4.5 hours of like raw footage.
Yeah, somewhere.
Which
around
may sound like a lot to a lot of people, but that's nothing.
That's nothing.
That's mm-hmm. nothing. So you had to know exactly what you wanted when you went in there.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Did you get to experiment with the camera at all?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a fair amount of improvisation with things after a certain point, but it was something where I just had accepted the fact that I was making this movie and that everything was going to have to be second to making it, and so...
What do you mean everything had to be second to making it?
You know, finding money to do things. Oh, okay. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was devote all of my time and energy and attention to this thing and then go in there and be sheepish about it. You know, mm-hmm. be like, well, I don't know if we should do that because I might run out of film. And there's always that. I mean, there's a reality to that because there's only so much that you can have with you.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is that I do things very simply. I mean, it was lit with. I mean, Super 8 cameras are tiny, and it was lit with these like glorified clip lamps.
Oh, really?
That yeah, they're just you know you get like a 300 watt bulb at Home Depot and put it in a clip lamp and shoot and it. Is bright and lights up the room, and Super 8 just has a really nice look to it in general. And so you learn to work with it. I mean, like I said, and I've been making stuff with Super 8 for years, so I know what it's going
to
look like.
Did you learn how to do this in film school?
No.
So you knew how to do this before film school?
No. Okay. I should backtrack. I learned how to put things together like this, you know, I learned how to map out a movie mm-hmm. in a very general way, and I did a lot of shooting on 16mm in film school.
Okay.
But once I saw film school wrapping up, I wanted to figure out a way to maintain the relationship I was building with film specifically instead of, you know, versus video, but have a feasible way to do that, and Super 8 is you know, is affordable.
I really want to talk about the big picture here, but let's finish the film talk.
Sure.
How did you get your actors? For someone that wants to work alone, how did you recruit?
That was tricky, and that I did have help with. I had to involve some friends that are much more familiar with that process with casting than I. My friend Emily and my friend Clara were huge helps in explaining to me, you know, like, okay, this is how you get a casting call out. This is how you write a casting call. Mm-hmm. This is how you do X, Y, and Z. And so they helped me figure that out. I wrote all that stuff out, and then they helped me put it out into the world, and then we all worked together on organizing that. So we did a casting call, and then there are some, you know, it's kind of half and half. There are some people in the movie that are just people that I knew that I asked to be in it, and some people that actually auditioned that are real actors that are out in the world acting.
Did you pay your actors?
No, nobody got paid.
That's awesome. And no, that's
I wish I could have.
No. I just think it's great that you were able to have a casting call, get actors. They were cool with it. They understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
What about did you edit the film?
I did.
And you edited it on Final Cut. You edited it professionally.
Yeah.
Do you wish, I know that earlier we said off mic, that it's not 1930 and that's why you used a computer. But
right.
Do you kind of wish you could use films and like a razor blade and just go at it?
Oh yeah. I mean, and I've done that too. You know, in film school, I did more of that sort of just cutting and taping mm-hmm. and more stuff involving optical printing and different things. But at a certain point you have to think about how you are going to feasibly do something and make something real. And the reality is that if I was going to make a decision that is so impractical as to use Super 8 for an entire feature film, I was going to have to make something else in the world a little bit more practical to compensate for it. Mm-hmm. And also just in terms of what I have the space and time and money to do, putting it on video and editing digitally has been a big part of how I've developed a vocabulary for images and for putting together movies and for putting together shorts.
Okay.
And so there's so much about making a feature film, especially a far more narrative feature film than I've ever made, that is well outside of my comfort zone, that there were a few things where I was just like, I'm going to let myself have this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to let myself, work with the same media. I'm going to let myself work on a computer with it. I'm not a computer person, mm-hmm. but it's just the way that I'm comfortable with working with that.
So in an ideal world, would you have shot on an 8mm? Would you have shot in black and white?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you know, I'm not really interested in relating things that are made to any sort of ideal. Okay. Because I feel like the fact
How about this? When you initially thought of it,
mm-hmm.
did you end up with that product that you wanted?
Yeah, it's really similar. It's weirdly similar. To a point where there are things that are inexplicably similar. But
you say that like you're kind of weary of your luck or something.
No, not at all. It's been a really fortunate process. When I wrote it, it was something that I tried to be cognizant of what was actually possible for me to do.
Okay.
But that being the case, it did pan out pretty close to what the original script is.
Okay. What's next?
Both
for this film, The Pink Hotel, and other projects.
Next, I'm going to sleep for a little bit. And then in mid-May, I'm going to go up to Winnipeg and work with Guy Madden up there on a movie. And
that's neat.
Yeah, that's neat. That'll be really cool. So we've been friends and correspondents for a while, and he asked me up to shoot this film with him.
So you're going to be shooting the next Guy Madden film, one of the guys. Are you the DP? Or?
I'm not. Okay. No, it's this guy Ben is the DP, and then Guy shoots as well, and then I'm going to shoot. We're all sort of in tandem. But really, it's a thing where he asked me to shoot on the feature proper sort of as needed, and then be shooting kind of improvised or my own stuff using the sets and using the space and time just there with everyone to make...
Something.
Produce more work. Yeah.
Do you know what you're going to try to do, or is it just?
No, I'm going to try. I'm going to try to do as little pre-planning as possible. I'm going to try to just let my brain calm down for a little bit before I go.
Do you hope happens to the Pink Hotel?
I in the summer I'm planning a small European tour for it, so I'm setting up shows over there, and each show will have a different overture. The show at the Music Box has an overture by Daniel and I, and me. And then overseas, there will be different people playing before each one, including Tommy Jansen, who's the guy that did the score for the movie, who's a really amazing experimental musician in Norway. So it'll probably be, ideally, it would be London, Paris, Berlin, and Oslo. So
that's so great.
Yeah, it should be cool. And then, you know, submitting to festivals and...
Yeah.
I want it to just kind of become clear what happens with it. I made it and it's there, and once it's out and just is a thing that people can watch, I feel like a trajectory will kind of materialize at some point.
You're very positive for someone that's an artist.
I sound more positive than I
am. Would you say you're an artist?
All
right.
Yeah.
Fag, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know.
No.
I would say I'm an art fag.
There it is. Yeah. I've been saying that for years.
Yeah.
I have.
Yeah. It's a good term.
Isn't it?
Daniel and I actually bonded at one point early on in our friendship over our unconditional love, completely divorced of literal meaning, but unconditional love of the terms faggot and retard.
Either way, we've just made enemies everywhere. So.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's end this interview with a question from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. I don't know if you've heard it before, whatever. Yeah. Pick a number between 1 and 260.
260? Let's do 111.
Good. Good one. If your parents lost their jobs and you had to try to help support your family, what sort of things would you do to earn money? Nothing you're doing now.
Nothing I'm doing now. Yeah. Oh. Oh, Lord. Well, luckily my parents are fairly self-sufficient folks.
Are you a rich kid?
I'm not. No. Okay. No, not self-sufficient. You're getting not self-sufficient financially, but are good at working out their own. Yeah. They're
adults.
They're adults. My mom's an RN and my dad worked in a bookstore.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's a technical writer now. Yeah, and they both have, over the past couple of years, they've started an antique art garden store in Michigan, so they're very motivated.
It's folks. Very rare when a guest comes on here and they could send this to their parents and both the parents and the child could be proud of each other.
It's weird.
You did a great job.
Great
they
job.
They did a great job.
They did do a great job.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, your health. You gross. Really shouldn't be doing what you should be like an architect for the city that does plants gardens on the weekends for charity. Like that's your background. Why are you making films, man?
I travel to London and Paris and Berlin.
Fuck you. No.
I help out with a charity garden now and again.
See, this is it. Like you have such a healthy background. You should not be an artist.
I'll try and stop that as soon as possible.
I wish you'd plug away. No, everything should be in 3D.
That's true. HD, 4D.
It'd be so great if one of your 30 seconds of the film was in 3D.
It was in 3D. I had a friend that figured out how to make his own 3D camera with just two video cameras.
You just got to do that. Just to fuck with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a blip, but like a 10...
Just a
section.
Like the
Andy Kaufman, I got to get off my couch to adjust the TV thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. I like that. Really, in those moments in the sort of inexplicable gimmick moments in those William Castle pictures mm-hmm. where it's color. It's color now.
I love that stuff.
Get ready for your ghost viewer.
Why should people come on Friday to the Music Box?
It's a good night out.
It is a good night out.
Yeah.
Wow, you really don't know how to sell your film. Okay, listen. It's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime type of event. It's your first feature film. Come on out. It's there's a lot of people coming, but if you're listening to this, you really should come out. It'll be a fun night. If you listen to this show, you'll probably like this film based on all the guests we have on it. See, I'm trying to shill for you, man.
I appreciate that. No, it's good. I mean, there's, I'm getting together with Daniel after the theater closes tonight to run through things, but basically there's a couple of short films that are opening, and then Daniel and I are going to do an overture, and then there's the first 5 minutes of the movie are a cartoon.
Really?
So there's kind of a pre-show cartoon. I had...
Who did the cartoon?
My friend Lily Carre, who's an absolutely incredible animator and illustrator, and she does fantastic work.
I'm glad that we got to mention her if she listens, so it's not going to ignore her.
No, I know, and she basically, I wrote this section of the movie, and we had been wanting to collaborate on something for a while, and so we were talking about it, and I sent her the text of it, and she said, okay, and we've met, and talked about different ideas and talked about how we were going to work this out. And then she just sort of went into her space and took a couple weeks and did this incredible, it's all cut out paper.
Jesus.
And, it looks drawn, but it's all just very meticulously cut out paper puppets.
That sounds great.
And she did it on a multiplane. There's actually two versions. There's a color version, a black and white version. And they have different music.
What are you showing on,
The black and white version is married to the movie.
Got it.
And then the color version, we both liked both of them so much that we decided to just have two. So my version has music by this guy, Rutger Zuvelt, who's got a project called Machine Fabric. And he's an experimental fella as well, does incredible work. And he let me borrow a song of his for it. And then Lily used a really great, so I think it's Taboo. I think the record is called Taboo. It's a great old tiki record.
Okay.
So they're very different feels, but it's the same material. It's interesting.
I like when people like you come on the show because it's worlds that most people have no idea about. It's nice.
I'm glad.
All right, go to the Music Box on Friday nights at 9:45. You can buy your tickets in advance right now. Go to
Is it Brown Paper? Brown Paper Tickets.
No, screw that. If people put in the Pink Hotel, they'll go to your Facebook page.
Yeah. There's a Facebook page for the movie. There's also, if you go to theoperatedeye.com, that's my website.
Okay.
And that has a link to the production blog, and then it also has some previous artwork, short films.
There you go. Whatever. So then you can check it out. And the trailer's there?
The trailer
is a very good haunting trailer.
Thank you.
And yeah, I'll see him on Friday. Come out to that. Let's close with Ghost Song, a song that you did a video for.
And is the closing song of the film.
There you go. I didn't know that. Thanks for ruining it. All right. thanks to Chris. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful evening.
Spirit of